Well, good morning, everyone. I'm very excited to be here and excited to see such great attendance at a breakout session. Today, I'll be talking about Detroit's screening program. I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors, Amy Peterson, who's with the Michigan Department of Health and is the coordinator for Detroit's program. And then we have Nicole Ledon from the Division of Adolescent School Health and Patricia Dittus from the Division of STD Prevention. So as an overview of today's discussion, Detroit is the birth of Motown, so I'll use a musical analogy and say that we'll play some oldies by looking at review of previous programs and key publications. I should also add that Felicia Lewis has a review article in the special issue of STD that's in the bag that you got when you registered. So I'll just send a couple slides on that. Next, I'll talk about the remix, where we had an expert panel between our two divisions, DASH and DSCDP, to look at those findings in greater detail and see how we could pull them apart and look at them differently. Next, we're working on our new album. Our first single is Detroit's Program. I'll talk briefly about those results, and next we'll sample some beats on some new research that we're doing. So first, let's start off with reviewing what we know to date. Well, when we talk about school-based screening, of course, we start in Louisiana and the New Orleans program. I think this is such an interesting story because it parallels a lot of scientific literature and how it evolves over time. But in this case, it does it sort of quickly and with the first initial author. So the New Orleans program began in 1995. Initially, they found that it was a feasible means of identifying and treating a high number of adolescents who are, of course, at great risk for chlamydia and gonorrhea. They also did some economics work and found that it was cost-effective and cost savings relative to screening in other settings. So they were off to a great start. After 3 years, they did a publication that said, well, you know, participation is about half. It's 52 to 65%. We didn't see a change in chlamydia among girls. And there was a significant reduction among boys, but it still only went down by half to about 3.2%. So it's starting to cool off a little bit. And subsequently, they found in future years of the study, well, you know, in hindsight, really the rates didn't change among females at all. They persisted. Students were not compliant. They didn't participate well in the program. And the PI herself, which is so remarkable about this, Deb Cohen, the PI herself did an op-ed piece that called for completely looking at STD control among adolescents in a different way, and calling for social media strategies, or back before their social media, social campaigns, and new directions other than school-based screening. Yet there have been a lot of other programs since New Orleans, so there's a lot of other reasons that we wanted to consider it. Looking at those other programs, the ones that have been published anyway, Philadelphia has a lot of literature, dates back to 2002. They have several publications that document associations with infection. They haven't published data on disease prevalence, but they do talk about a lack of reduction in disease prevalence, for example, in the article that you have in your special edition. New York City has had a program off and on in different locations and resembling different programmatic strategies over the years. They have one paper that talks about associations with infections, but again, nothing about disease prevalence over time. San Francisco is kind of unique. They had a pilot in 1999, and they have 1 year of data from 2007 that were published. Both found a low prevalence of chlamydia and almost no gonorrhea. And this isn't really a reflection on the school program. San Francisco in general just has a low prevalence of these things, so it's not surprising that their school program didn't pick up much. And so they only had the program for that year and abandoned the approach. All right, so let's talk about the expert panel. So in light of these several programs going on around the country and us being aware that there were unpublished results that are not reflected in literature, our two divisions at CDC got together and convened a panel now just over 2 years ago in July of 2014. And we had a representative from each known school-based STD screening program, and I would add extant STD screening program because we couldn't get in contact with anyone in San Francisco. And there was one other program that we knew of in a rural area that had been discontinued, and again, there were no lights on at home, so we couldn't contact anyone. So we were able to invite someone from Chicago, D.C., Detroit, New Orleans, Philadelphia, and New York City. And then we had some other experts, and that included NGOs that support school-based screening programs, including those funded by DASH to support this work. And they included Amanda Brown at CAI, Gail Burstein, who's the Commissioner of Health in Erie County, but previously has worked with CDC and, in fact, wrote the book on STD screening back in the day when she worked here. We have Kathy Hsu, who's in the audience today, and Bill Smith, who's at the conference. I'm not sure if he's in the room. And each program was asked to present the results of their program, whether they have been published or not. And we've decided to keep those results. We haven't published the whole results. We just kind of just wanted to glean the narrative of what they've seen in their programs. So here's a summary of our findings. Much like New Orleans has found, we found that school-based screening programs have repeatedly found a high number of chlamydia and gonorrhea cases, and that cases that are identified in this manner can be treated effectively and in a timely manner. School-based screening can also be an intervention to increase access to testing, particularly where cost and transportation are issues, and these are particular issues to adolescents in any location, but certainly in some areas more than others. To date, at the time of the program, we did not see a documented sustained reduction in prevalence of chlamydia or gonorrhea, but we identified that there could be collateral reasons why you may want to pursue this programmatic approach. And also that unpublished data, particularly preliminary data from Detroit that were promising, could add diversity to literature. And so we pursued Detroit to offer some help there. Detroit's program began in the 2010-2011 school year. It itself is based on Philadelphia, which in turn is based on New Orleans. So it's really, really similar to what they do there. I think the one difference is when they call students down for screening, they just pick out a week, let's say Monday through Friday. Sophomores or freshmen are called on Monday, sophomores on Tuesday and so forth, and Friday's a makeup day. So every student is given 2 days to be tested, the opportunity to be tested on. And on that particular day, let's say Monday when we have freshmen, all the freshmen in a core class like English are called down. So by the end of the day, all the freshmen have at least gone to the education session. And then just like the other programs, once they get to the education session, they receive a little bit of information about what will happen and the disease itself. They're given a lab form, a urine cup, and they're led to the bathroom, and they return that cup either full or empty in a paper bag. We offered assistance to Detroit and to all of the sites that do not have published data, and Detroit was the first to take us up on the offer, and so we set up an evaluation with them with the overarching question of, is there a sustained reduction in chlamydia positivity among participants in their program? So these results are under review right now, so I'll just talk about them really briefly. This first slide, which seems to have a horrible color scheme in hindsight, is just really showing you the odds ratios of associated positivity. So again, there are all these papers that talk about association with the positivity from other sites, and so we want to look and see if our population is different from those sites. Looking quickly, we have females at much higher odds, just as everywhere else. Increasing odds of positivity with age, just as everywhere else. And schools were relatively similar to each other. There was one school with significant but slightly higher odds of positivity. I would add that we did not include race in this analysis because Detroit schools are almost entirely African American, so it doesn't lend anything to analysis, and it's perhaps identifying to non-black students. This slide here is really the kicker. So all of these programs that have talked about kind of I see people leaning towards the screen, have talked about a sort of a blip after a couple of years where you catch a lot of number of cases, disease goes down, but then it goes back up. So we have 5 school years of data here. You can see at the next to last row at the bottom, in the 2010-2011 school year, prevalence began about 10%. And after the 5th year, it was about 6%. And then if you look among males, it started at 4.67%. It increased in the 2nd year to 6.37%. So, but that blip took a turn again and decreased steadily each year down to 3.32%. And among females, it was quite drastic. Disease started at 16%. and decreased to 9.79%. So putting the results in context now, even though Detroit's program was based on Philadelphia and New Orleans, the findings are different. Well, of course, we want to ask, well, why is that? For one thing, we know that participation in Detroit was about 79%, and participation here means number of students who provided a sample, not just attended the session. And that's double what we've seen in Philadelphia so far. And we don't have data from New Orleans, but we know that Cohen has published that participation was really, really low, particularly in the last years of the program. We also know that Detroit is quite a unique place, given recent American history. And community services for STDs are less than robust, especially relative to Philadelphia that has a strong program. Detroit's program, because of the bankruptcy and changes in contracts and movement of public services, Detroit's school program may have well been the only consistent source of free STD testing in the city during the time that we looked at this evaluation. We also know that anecdotal evidence from their program, we don't have quantitative data about treatment, but anecdotal data about treatment are that it was quite high, and also all of the cases were able to be treated with the first line of medication. Thus, Detroit was able to identify and clear a high number of disease asymptomatic cases within a small window of time. So in essence, it's kind of an inoculation without a vaccine. All right, so let's talk about what we're new directions we're taking with this. Well, as I mentioned, we know that community context may have well played a role here, particularly with regard to availability of community services. We know school-based programs are influenced by community factors, right, that schools are nested within communities. And some of those factors may include availability of community services and interaction between student and community members. Felicia Lewis, who's the PI in Philadelphia, published a paper that said that partner meeting location in Philadelphia was significantly associated with positivity there. And we know that Detroit played, that community factors may have played such a role that Detroit added a question about partner meeting location to the 2015-2016 school year lab requisition form. So let's look at the data there. They're quite interesting. Bear with me, this is a little bit tricky to explain. If you look at the bottom, you'll see there that in both locations, school meeting partners from your school was protected for chlamydia, although a little bit more so in Philadelphia. If you look at other locations, so this can include not school, not neighborhood, but community locations, including online, that was risky in both locations, although slightly more so in Philadelphia. But the interesting thing here, the really different part that distinguishes Detroit from Philadelphia, is that the neighborhood location was protective in Detroit, but it was risky in Philadelphia. Now, we still don't know why. The Detroit schools, the ones that are included in this evaluation, include both neighborhood schools, where students are coming just from their particular catchment area near the school, and also charter schools where they're coming from all over the city. And there's no busing, but still we would expect that they are indeed coming from all over the city. So we really have a mix here of community partners and students from all over the town. So this is puzzling to us. But there are things that we can do. So we have partners here from the Harvard School of Public Health. We're working with them in the Division of STD Prevention to apply some modeling techniques to try and figure this out. Obviously, we can't go back and collect data from community partners, and even in future studies, it's very difficult and cumbersome to do so. And so we're looking at modeling as a technique to begin including these other factors to see if we can explain what's going on. So I have I hope this is a good analogy. You guys can tell me after this. An oversimplification of the incredible and sophisticated work that they're doing. So on the left-hand side, we have a model population. You see, in this case, we have circles and squares. Some are filled in with color and some are not. This just represents that we can include a lot of different characteristics, and the final model will have many characteristics. We see that in a pair formation model, those individuals in the model population form pairs at a certain rate. Not all of them do, and they mix with each other, and at the end we can estimate our dependent variable, in this case chlamydia positivity. Well, what's so interesting is if we think again about this partner meeting location thing, we can parameterize our model to reflect that students in Philadelphia who meet community partners or neighborhood partners, could wind up with disease, whereas in Detroit they'd be less likely to do so. And so we can start to tease all of that apart and see if maybe we can explain the findings just on looking at this one part of it. So our next steps for that project are they're just working on the base model and refining it for chlamydia. Next, we're going to take the data that we have for Detroit, Philadelphia, and Chicago to look at those factors in more detail and see if we can eventually develop a meta model so that we can plug in factors about an entirely different community and spit out some expectations of what impact a school-based screening program might have so that they can decide whether to start, continue, or end a program there. I have a lot of acknowledgments. We have incredible partners in Michigan who have supported not only the screening program, but allow us to do this evaluation. Felicia Lewis and colleagues in DSTDP have been terrific and really been a great example of how DASH and DSTDP can work together on a shared goal. We have, and my ranch chief is here, so she'll appreciate the shout out to our management for supporting all this work, and of course our colleagues at Harvard who are working so hard on the model. And I would be remiss if I didn't acknowledge my now fiance, who's been another epidemiologist, and we've shared many, many dinners discussing this.
Great, thank you. So we do have time for some questions. If you'd use the microphones, that would be great.
Good morning. This is Neha Shoka from New York City Department of Health. I work with school screening program. I have one question and one information. For your information, we have one published data in 2010 in Journal of Adolescent Health showing the prevalence of CTGC. It was 6.3%. And today we have one poster that showed the recent prevalence of 4.5%, the prevalence. And the question, do you have identifying any factor that associated with the higher screening rate, that is 79%, you said? 79% acceptance rate of screening. We are fighting for that too. We have around 50% in New York City.
10, 10?
Sorry?
What percent do you have?
Around 50%.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's more common. But it's great to hear that you've had those results there. Let's talk more about what you found and see how we might be able to work together.
But do you have any factors that is associated for the higher screening rate or the 79% participation rate?
Well, like I said, I think one part is that all students are led down, so they're not given the option of attending the education session, but they are given the option of providing the sample or not. So that's one area that seems to be different from a lot of other programs where students have the choice of going down to the education session or not. So already a lot of students are taken out of the mix just by not going downstairs, and then we know only a certain number of those who arrive will wind up being screened. I should say Detroit also emphasizes that you should, or they set a norm that you should test whether or not you think you have been exposed and whether or not you're sexually active. And they do that so that there's no stigma around providing a sample, even though it's in a paper bag. You know, students will talk. So I think they set the norm quite high.
Questions over here?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much for a wonderful talk. Patty Kissinger from New Orleans. I was wondering if, I didn't hear you speak about, and you might have, what about index treatment? Did you have good treatment rates? And also expedited partner treatment, because some of the modeling literature is showing that expedited partner treatment might even be more impactful than higher rates of screening. So I was just wondering how are the partners treated?
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. So we don't have quantitative data on treatment. We know that it was really, really high. And so that's all I can say, above 95%. The interesting thing about how the setup in Detroit works with the St. John Health System is that they're all outside door school-based health centers. So if you have a partner in the school at your treatment, the nurse can then call down the next group of students that could include your partner. So if your partner's in the school, they can get treated in the school-based health center. Because of the outside door school-based health centers, if your partner is not in the school, they can still get treated there.
Thank you. Thanks. Question over?
I think she was first. Go ahead.
Okay. Oh, thank you. Hi. Good morning. My name is Meg Cheyenne. I'm from the U.S. Virgin Islands, where we have a lot of chlamydia. Mm-hmm. And a colleague and I have talked about doing something like this. So it's really cool to see it's actually been done. But two concerns, a lot of concerns were raised, but two in particular that I wanted to ask about was, if you know anything about how these different programs got around, two issues. One is, we anticipated in our community a lot of parental backlash. Why are you testing my kids for this? They're not sexually active. It's just, we anticipated that concern. The other concern was, in our context, we know we're going to get a lot of positives, so how do you bring back the students for treatment and the partners, which was good point raised, without bringing a lot of stigma and attention to these students?
Great question. So on the at the beginning of the school year, the parents opt their students out of the school-based health center, and all services there that include the screening program. So it's just rolled up into everything that the SBHC provides. So they're not really given a separate option about doing the screening or not. And then the students can assent themselves. So I think that gets around that issue. Your second question was on how they're called down. Students are called down who are both positive and negative. So there's just a large cohort, and no one knows who is what. All of the students are treated the same way, and they talk to the nurse, and the nurse does risk reduction counseling for negatives. So there's no stigma in being called back.